Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Alice Parks.
And I'm Rachel Scott. And this is Accountable, a special series from ABC Audio. So if you heard our first two episodes, you know the whole point of this podcast is to look at what's at stake in the policy debates that often get stuck in partisan gridlock by sharing stories about real people. So today we're talking about the complexities around minimum wages. And Mary Alice, you were a campaign reporter in 2016, you were ABC's deputy political director, and now you're a White House correspondent. This is an issue that you've been covering for years.
Yeah, this has been such a hot topic for voters. On the federal level, on the local level, candidates are thinking about this. They've been debating it for decades. So let's start with the basics. The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 an hour for the past 12 years.
And to put that into perspective, if you work 40 hours a week at $7.25 an hour, you make just over $15,000 a year. That's actually about $1,000 less than the national poverty line for a family of two. But in 30 states and Washington, D.C., lawmakers have stepped in and passed the minimum wage above that $7.25 federal level.
Virginian workers are one step closer to making more money.
New Jersey's minimum wage increases to $12 an hour.
Florida's minimum wage will move up to $15 an hour over the next 5 years.
And some cities have gone even further. Just this last week, Chicago's minimum wage is now $15 an hour. Still, Democrats here in Washington think that the federal floor has to go up.
Florida just passed it. As divided as that state is, they just passed it. The rest of the country is ready to move as well.
During the 2020 Democratic primary, there was all that big talk about the fight for 15, the idea of hiking the federal minimum wage all the way to that $15 an hour mark.
$7.25 an hour is a starvation wage. That's what it is.
Most recently, and Rachel, you've covered all of this, Democrats on Capitol Hill talked about maybe doing a minimum wage hike in their COVID relief package that they worked on right after President Biden took office.
That $15 an hour minimum wage hike is not going to make it into the Senate's version of the bill.
But there was some division still about what exactly that final number should be. So they punted last spring, and we'll see what they do now.
And complicating all of this even more, in most states, employers can pay tip workers like restaurant servers and bartenders less than the federal minimum wage. They're allowed to pay them just $2.13 an hour. That's called a subminimum wage.
Well, employers are supposed to make sure that all employees still make at least that federal minimum wage with their tips included, and that they make up the difference if, like, 1 week or 1 month, an employee's tips don't get them to that bare minimum. But we know that in reality, that just doesn't always happen.
So now you do have some states that have stepped in to raise their tip minimum wage. In fact, in states like California, Nevada, and Washington, tip workers make the same minimum wage as everybody else. And they also get to keep their tips too. But in places like Pennsylvania, servers are completely dependent on tips.
The restaurant business is like a family. If you've ever noticed, almost every diner has a little old lady in it everybody calls mom. I prefer to be called Aunt Carrie.
Carrie Schweitzer is a server at Miller's Ale House in Philadelphia. She's been working in the service industry for most of her life.
I started serving in 1985. I told them I was 17 years old. I was actually only 12.
That's right. Carrie's been taking orders and serving food for the better part of 38 years. And honestly, she wouldn't have it any other way.
I love it. I love being in family restaurants around children. I have loved watching as women got married, and I was a part of that.
Carrie's got a big personality and a great sense of humor. And that connection with people can really make all the difference in whether she makes enough money to pay her bills.
I make $2.83 an hour. With my tips on top, after taxes and clearing things, I can make anywhere from $10 to $12 an hour on a good night.
So remember, the federal minimum wage for tip workers is $2.13 an hour. But in Pennsylvania, it's actually 70 cents higher. So Carrie hustles and works hard to take care of her customers. But even when the tips are good, it's really tough to make ends meet.
I live paycheck to paycheck because both me and my son, who's 26 years old, work a full-time job 40 to 50 hours a week, and yet we still qualify for food stamps and health insurance through the state.
And that's a tough pill to swallow for someone who works as hard as Carrie.
Working full-time and having to accept welfare makes me feel like I'm an unappreciated person.
And sometimes it feels like the only way to earn the tips she needs to get by is to put up with some really awful behavior.
I was 13 years old the very first time I had my backside pinched to get an extra tip. If I was able to get a full-time wage, I would not have to jump through hoops and do embarrassing things for a tip. I wouldn't have to put up with the man calling me baby doll or baby girl. But I'm a waitress, so I'm there to be harassed.
Women make up the vast majority of service industry workers, and so we looked into this. One survey found that women who have to rely on tips to make up the difference in pay are twice as likely to report sexual harassment.
There is no excuse for a woman her entire lifetime having to put up with verbal abuse and having to put up with sexual abuse just to get a tip to make a livable wage.
Now to growing concerns about the deadly coronavirus officially hitting the U.S.
It is lights out for tens of thousands of bars and restaurants across the city and even more across the state.
Carrie says the pandemic made a tough situation much worse. She got laid off when restaurants in Philly were forced to shut down. And for someone who's been working since she was 12, it was a real challenge.
No waitress alive wants to sit home and look at four walls. We are active people. We are workers. We actually have a desire to care for people. Making me sit in my house by myself for 6 months was insanity.
She was out of work from March to September. Not only that, it took nearly a month for her unemployment benefits to kick in. And when she finally did return to the restaurant, she had to confront a new kind of harassment from some customers.
This happened to me only a couple of months ago. It was an elderly man. He comes up to me and he says, "Can you lower your mask? I like cuter waitresses." He's like, "Come on, I'll take good care of you." I really needed the money that day, so I lowered my mask. Do you realize I just put my life at risk? This was before I'd received my vaccination. I put my life at risk for a $3 tip.
Going back to work should have been a relief, but instead,
I felt like I was the lowest of the low.
So the bottom line here is Carrie wants to see the minimum wage for tip workers go up. She's tired of feeling powerless, like she has to choose between earning a living and standing up for herself, for even her safety.
People always said, if you wanted a better job, get out of the industry and get a better job. I would rather hear people say, "I want to help you save the industry you love."
And she has some strong words for elected leaders who are against increasing the minimum wage.
I say shame on you. When I hear a lawmaker say that he does not want to raise the minimum wage, he is telling me he does not care about 50% of America. Once again, it is exploiting a workforce of mostly women and people of color.
So we know Carrie's situation isn't unique. But that's also just one piece of the puzzle. Business owners also have to be able to pay those higher wages. Advocates argue big chain restaurants can afford to pay workers more without increasing menu prices. But when you talk to independent restaurant owners, they say they operate on such thin margins, they just can't afford to pay their staff more.
Either you figure out a way to get more people to buy food at the same price, which is very hard to do, or you figure out how to have people who are already coming pay more money for the same food.
And at most high-end restaurants, like the one Eric Williams opened in Chicago, the waitstaff already makes well above the minimum wage with tips.
I've actually never worked with a server that has made minimum wage or anywhere close. Many of the servers that we have now make a professional wage above $50,000 a year.
Eric is the owner and chef of the upscale Southern restaurant, Virtue.
I mean, Virtue, by its very definition, means of high moral standard. And so we got some morals. We got some principle.
Like Carrie, he's worked in the service industry pretty much his whole life. When he first started out, he was assigned to the salad station. And over the past 20 years, he worked his way up to executive chef before opening up his own restaurant.
The first time you open a restaurant that's your own, like, it's a pressure that it's hard to define. We push really, really hard and we do really well. On a night where I'm doing 200 people, right? Four people left, less than excited. For us, that's a failure.
Virtue opened its doors in 2019, just as the city of Chicago was considering eliminating that sub-minimum wage for tip workers and forcing employers to pay them the same minimum wage as everyone else.
And it's time to do it right now. We can't wait.
Eric didn't see how his business could survive that, so he got involved to try to stop it.
No business can sustain higher costs and lower profitability and remain in business. Food prices have gone up, fuel prices have gone up, and rents take an increase every year. So we've had to raise prices, and not just at our restaurant, but restaurants across the country.
The city council did pass a minimum wage hike, and it actually took effect just this past week. The minimum wage in Chicago is now $15 an hour, though smaller businesses have until 2023 to pay their workers that much. And the sub-minimum wage for tip workers went up too, from $6.60 to $9 an hour. But for Eric, this is still very much a win, because restaurant owners like him don't have to pay their servers that full $15 an hour. But what about Carrie?
You know, a tip is only supposed to be an extra dessert topping. It's not supposed to be, oh my God, you're supposed to live off of this?
Eric got into this fight to defend his own business. But during that debate in Chicago, he heard from people like Carrie, many of them single mothers and women of color who were barely getting by in the industry. He says it made him realize that the rules for restaurant wages shouldn't be the same across the board.
After understanding that a little better, then my position changed. And not a position to eradicate tip wage, but I do think that there are bad actors out there. There are chain restaurants. They need to be held to a different standard. People deserve to earn a living, a fair living. And our country is advanced enough for us to figure that out.
So, Marias, you know, I think it was really interesting to hear that Eric's position on this had changed, that he thinks that there should be some help for people like Carrie.
Yeah, Rachel, I worked in restaurants all through college. I remember working back-to-back doubles so I could fit in four shifts on the weekends. My feet would be killing me by the end. Oh, my gosh, it was tough work. But I really remember, too, just how stressful it was to know that things totally outside your control could really impact what you took home at the end of the night, how much money your friends made. I started out hostessing, and I would worry that if someone didn't like their table, they might not tip their server.
Right.
Or it's just slow. Maybe it's just raining that night. It's just raining. And so fewer people come into the restaurant. It just happens to be a slow night. That kind of unpredictability was really tough. And now through COVID, can you imagine? Do you really want to be the person that has to tell someone to put their mask on?
Right.
I mean, you can see how quickly servers end up feeling so vulnerable.
Right. And I think the pandemic has really added just a whole nother layer onto this.
With COVID restrictions being lifted, many businesses are now struggling to find workers.
Some restaurant managers claiming those extended benefits are leading to a shortage in the workforce.
And there's been a big debate about whether people are just not coming back to work because the wages are too low.
It's not a worker shortage. We have workers. It's a surplus of bad jobs.
Labor being what it is, with the cost of labor being what it is, you know, we have to operate differently.
Restaurants are struggling. The National Restaurant Association says that more than 100,000 restaurants closed this last year during the pandemic. I feel like every neighborhood has seen evidence of that. I spoke to Virginia Congressman Bobby Scott about all this. He chairs the House Education and Labor Committee. He's been pushing to phase out that separate minimum wage for tipped workers. But I told him about Eric, who argues that some kind of one-size-fits-all regulation just isn't the answer either when restaurants are hurting. So I asked Chairman Scott if this was the right time for more regulation.
Well, it's not regulation. It's a fair wage. I think we first have to recognize the problem that minimum wage itself is woefully inadequate. There's no county in the United States where a full-time minimum wage worker can afford a modest two-bedroom apartment. I mean, we're not talking just San Francisco and Manhattan. There's no county in the United States. So you know something's wrong with that picture. People are working full-time, still in poverty. So I think most people would recognize that something needs to be done.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that larger minimum wage debate in just a second. But I do want to ask you one more question about tipped workers in particular. Your legislation calls for guaranteeing that tip workers are paid at least the federal minimum wage. It would phase out that sub-minimum wage that's just for tip workers. But would that still end up meaning that the restaurant has to calculate some difference between someone's tip and the minimum wage, or does all that go away?
Now, that's the present situation where they have to add up to see if they made the minimum wage, and if not, the restaurant would have to make up the difference. But the fact is the violations of that are so routine that most people don't even know they have that right to be made whole. Hmm. And some in restaurants work the full week and don't come anywhere close to the minimum wage. Obviously, in high-end restaurants, the minimum wage is not a factor. So some are making $20, $30, $40, $50, maybe even $100 an hour. Mm-hmm. But in the low-end restaurants, where the fare may not be that high, and if it's not that busy, you're not even going to make the minimum wage on a slow day. So the idea is to have everybody make at least the minimum wage as their base salary. Mm-hmm. And if they make tips over and above that, that's fine. We have to really put this in perspective. One study showed that restaurants now following a significant increase in the minimum wage had to increase their prices 1.45%. Well, they have to do that if the rent goes up, if the cost of food goes up, if any costs go up. And why are we singling out labor costs as the one that can't go up?
But I think that is one of the criticisms that we hear from a lot of people, or at least one of the anxieties we hear from a lot of people, that it's going to get passed on to the consumer, that there's a trickle down where the consumer just has to pay more. And is that fair?
Is it fair when the rent goes up?
I mean, that's hard for businesses too. Yeah. But
at some point you have to put this in perspective. You ask people if they're willing to pay a little more. I think the overwhelming portion of customers would be willing to pay to make sure that the workers get a minimum wage. But I think we have to, when people are complaining that they're going to go out of business if they have to pay the minimum wage, they say that to the press. Hmm. But when they're behind closed doors at a stockholders meeting, when the Securities and Exchange, the SEC, requires them to tell the truth, you get another story. I mean, you've had many companies say that the increase in the minimum wage is no threat. And some say it might even help businesses, because if other people are making a higher minimum wage, there'll be more people that can come to the restaurant.
There was a new report out from Harvard Business Review just this last month that showed that one fashion retailer ended up cutting employees' hours and some of their benefits because of an increase in minimum wages in their state. So how do you make sure when you're drafting legislation, or are you concerned about making sure that the average worker doesn't get impacted negatively and actually see their benefits maybe go down overall because of wage increases?
If the minimum wage goes up, there may be some mild erosion in hours, but for the worker, if you're go from 7:25 to 15, if you lose a few hours, you're still going to be making substantially more than you were before. And if the employer is seeking to cut benefits like health benefits, pension, and others, they will be at a serious competitive disadvantage when they are competing for workers. So they could try that, but I think it would probably backfire.
Talk to me about $15 specifically. We hear from even plenty of your Republican colleagues that the federal minimum wage should go up some. But we hear from small business owners that sort of shudder at $15 specifically. I've heard some say, wasn't demand just $10.10 a few years ago? What's the justification for $15 an hour across the country?
Well, let me say, first of all, the debate in the House was not over it should go up some and an alternative number. There was, in fact, no alternative suggested that the Republicans would have accepted.
None? You don't think they would have accepted any?
They didn't offer any. The debate was whether it should go up at all or not. And now they're coming back, and they're always coming up with, well, it should go up, but not whatever the bill says. It shouldn't go up that much, so we're going to vote no. They're always going to vote no. Let them come up with an alternative number and pass it. Mm-hmm. But to just say, as many of them are saying, I don't support 15, and then to suggest that they ought to get credit for saying they would have supported something less, well, then support something less. And then perhaps we can negotiate something in the middle. But to just they haven't passed anything.
But how did you arrive at the $15 an hour number? You know, if you live in San Francisco or Manhattan, $15 an hour, it might not feel remotely like enough. But if you live in other parts of the country, you know, the cost of living is just so different. So how do you explain $15?
Well, first of all, you look at a number of measures where if you increase the minimum wage by productivity, it would be about $20 an hour. Over the past 20 or 30 years, if you go by inflation, maybe 12, what you need to make to work your way out of poverty, it would be another number. What 50% of the median wage is another target. There are a number of targets, and most of them, 15 is within that range.
Chairman Scott, thank you for your insights. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Okay, thank you, Mary Alice.
That was a really interesting point that he was making. Democrats want to see Republicans either come up with a counter of what they want to see the minimum wage at, or just say out loud that they just support the minimum wage staying at what it is.
Yeah, and we also heard the chairman say that big chain restaurants actually talk about this issue a little differently with shareholders than sometimes with the press. And there is some evidence of that. We know that McDonald's, some other big companies have tried to reassure investors that actually they could probably make it work just fine if the minimum wage was to be increased, because they've had to do that. They have figured it out in cities and states where it's gone up.
So it seems like the key here is finding a solution that protects servers like Carrie from feeling like they have to endure harassment if they want to make enough money just to get by, but that also allows people like Eric to stay in business, a solution that would allow both of them to keep doing what they love.
But we want to give everybody the opportunity to be treated like they matter, from the time they hit that door entering to the time they hit the door exiting.
It's an amazing industry. It's a great place for single women like me when I first started to get out there and make a living. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a cop. I'm a waitress, and yet I've made a difference in this world.
And that's a wrap on Accountable. A big thank you to the Start Here team for letting us jump in their feed with this mini-series. Brad Melke, David Rhine, Madeline Wood, and especially Kelly Therese. So talented and did a really beautiful job producing this podcast.
I'm not sure she ever sleeps. But to the other amazing women of the DC Bureau who helped find the voices you heard here and helped us with all the research and writing, Shannon Crawford, Cheyenne Haslett, Sarah Kolonoski, Lauren Lantry, and Adia Robinson.
And a special shout out to Jordan Phelps, Lewis Millman, Eric Malo, Kevin Ryder, Marwa Mowaki, and Stacia Dashishku.
And our last few thanks, our executive producer, Liz Alessi, who puts up with all of our crazy.
Yes. And of course, my co-host, Mary Bruce, who couldn't be here this week because her little baby girl decided to show up early.
No, we're so excited. I'm Mary Alice Parks.
And I'm Rachel Scott. Thanks so much for listening.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.